Happy Halloween, it's Spooky Boo. Ready for part two of the Halloween Costume Tailor. This story is called Evacuation. Welcome to Scary Story Time with Spooky Boo. Tonight's story is about the town of Sandcastle and the continuation of the Halloween Costume Tailor. The town of Sandcastle is in the midst of the NorCal fires. With the wind blowing west, they have no choice but to evacuate, as forced by the local government. First, it was their power outage, causing a huge blackout in the town, but that didn't stop the rain of fire heading toward the coast. As citizens disappear from the town, Cyrus Vanslow stays to work on his projects. Is anyone safe? Please remember to check out the website at www.scarystorytime.com for more details about the show and the written text of these stories written by Spooky Boo Rhodes. For a commercial-free version, subscribe to Patreon at www.patreon.com/spookyboo scary storytime. This Saturday night, you'll find my friends and I watching Creature Features on YouTube at 10 p.m., It's going to be a lot of fun as our special guest is Jake Busey, most notably from Stranger Things and Starship Troopers, but a whole lot of other shows. It's going to be a lot of fun. The stories on Scary Story Time about the town of Sandcastle should be read in chronological order. While meant to be a series, some of the characters introduced in the story early on might make more sense if you start from the beginning. Now let's begin. The Halloween Costume Tailor, Part 2. Evacuation. Bright lights from the Gypsy Carnival lit up the night sky in Sandcastle. The fog cover was high that night, and the lights just reflected off of the clouds. People from miles away knew the town was starting its famous carnival, and there would be droves of customers coming in. The Sandcastle Police Department was ready and even hired more people from out of town to work for the next 2 weeks. Casey, the city's police chief, was sure that something crazy during the next 2 weeks would happen, especially during these strange times. Every year, something did always happen in the town. Usually it was simply a strange UFO sighting or a report of a ghost, vampire, or cult performing some ritual in the graveyard. But it was never anything critical. This year felt very different. Casey could feel it in his bones, and that was usually a bad thing. Usually, when Chief Weinsfeld felt different, something really bad was going to happen, and this is why he was so valued in the community. There was only one more week until the carnival, and Casey knew something was wrong. Very, very wrong. His hand shook as he put down his morning ritual coffee and looked at his cell. Another text message emergency. The fire up north had spread throughout the hills, igniting almost everything in its path. Every October since 2016, something was on fire, and he knew it wasn't just dry branches and leaves or a careless power company. Something was starting these fires, these horrible fires, something inhuman and unnatural. Ah, shit, he muttered in his coffee cup as he read the rest of the message. Susie, it's Weinsfeld. I hate to do this so close to Halloween, but we've been ordered by the governor's office to evacuate until further notice. I don't know. It's not even close, but the winds are supposed to be insane for the next few days, blowing this direction. Set up something with Alameda and Santa Clara counties if you have to. Yeah, we'll pull off some kind of fundraiser for those who need it. I know just the person who can help with that. I don't know. Just let me know. Reggie and I will start the rounds. Get the emergency broadcast out on KSND and the TV station, as well as Nixle, Twitter, Facebook. Yeah, everywhere. Thanks. He clicked in on his cell, then called Reggie to help. They were going door to door again. What a surprise. The last time he went door to door, there was some strange drug or viral breakout, and people were eating each other. Something else that hasn't been determined of what happened. One of his best cops was still quarantined in the hospital without any answers. The doctors couldn't figure out what the hell was going on either. And speaking of hospitals, where are they to go with the state hospital? Moving people from that facility was going to be a problem. There were so many who were either too old to move, or others who were just too crazy. Not prisoners. They would be simple, because they can be bussed in chains. But these people are a whole new level of freak show these days. Roy could help. The ward of the hospital listened to him. 2. I knew you'd be here, old friend, Roy said as he smiled, his opaque eyes focusing on Casey's location in the room. I figured you would, Roy. Hey, there's an emergency I thought you could help me with. Casey took a seat in the empty chair next to Roy, keeping his eyes on the people kneeling in front of his friend. He trusted no one in this circle, not even Roy. Ever since the accident when they were kids, Roy was very different. I already know. The witch told me in my sleep last night. You want me to help you evacuate the city. Weinsfeld shook his head and chuckled. Perhaps just the people here. They'll listen to you, and it will make it so much easier. I have to find a place that will take everyone by this evening, and that includes the jail, too. It's going to be a really crazy day. Anything you can do to help with your people will be incredibly helpful. You mean my disciples, Roy smiled. As Roy's organs were failing, the hospital told Casey Roy was put on steroids. His body was gaining weight and most of his teeth were gone by now. He looked more like a ghostly jack-o'-lantern than anything, with his almost toothy smile and his opaque, glowing eyes. Yeah, I suppose. Roy pushed himself up to his feet, something Casey Weinsfeld was unaware that Roy could even accomplish these days. Then he held up his hands. Gather round, my friends, gather round. Suddenly, people from all over the room and from the hallway were crowding inside Roy's room. Casey stood uncomfortably next to him, knowing most of these people frowned upon him, and many possibly wanted to kill him. Roy waited to speak until the room was full, as his minions came in from their rooms and the outside hospital grounds. How many of these patients heard him, Casey had no idea. He no longer asked questions of his insane friend. I know many of you do not like the law, but this man here is my friend. He wishes to help you. There is a fire possibly headed this way, as you already know by my sermon last night, the witch told me. I said there would be help, and there he is. Help him and listen. A low roar came from the crowd now standing around the room and out in the hall. When they stopped, they all kneeled in unison. Casey shook his head and started to speak. As he did, one of the kneeling people stood up and yelled, "He's the enemy!" "Silence!" Roy yelled. The man then sat back into his kneeling position as Casey spoke. "There is a fire about 60 miles from here and spreading fast. We are evacuating the city on orders from the governor. I need your cooperation in getting a few things together and being ready by noon tomorrow. If the spread is stopped in a few days, then everyone will return home. Roy will keep you informed of what is happening and when. Until then, just be ready. We want everyone to be safe." "Listen to the Lady of the Lake," one of Roy's disciples yelled. "She is light," another screamed. "Okie dokie," the chief tried to stifle a laugh and shook Roy's hand. His laughter stopped when he touched his friend's cold, leathery skin. "It's all right, old friend." Roy squeezed the chief's hand hard. "I'm still your buddy." 3. Getting the town evacuated wasn't all that difficult. Most people followed directions and were appreciative of the warning, but some were reluctant to leave. For those who refused, there was really nothing that Chief Winesfeld could do. The jail wasn't big enough to hold everyone, and it was being evacuated as well. Most of the prisoners who were guilty of heinous crimes were sent to San Quentin anyway, so the move was just a few people other than the hospital residents. They would require a bus. The Cow Palace in Daly City was already set up for a concert. They had to cancel, and the stage area would be big enough to hold most of the residents of the hospital. The biggest problems were the gypsies. Even though they could have just left in the caravan without issue, most of them would not leave. Casey tried to round them up, but many refused to even speak to him. The excuse was that they already had traveled 2,000 miles, and they weren't going anywhere or leaving their belongings behind. Casey figured that maybe their unappointed leader, Cyrus Vanslow, could speak to them. After a few brisk knocks on Cyrus's trailer, the flamboyant gypsy came to the door. Even when he wasn't acting, the gypsy was in his circus clothes. This amused Casey, but so did the fact that the gypsy looked a bit like the Joker. All they needed now was a Batman to come riding in on the Batmobile. Then this town would be complete and with insanity. "Hello, Mr. Vanslow. This is an evacuation order over the town, and I'll need you to take what you need the most and get out of town. The nearest cities of San Francisco, San Jose, and Fremont have room and have agreed to help out in any way they can." Casey smiled and offered his hand for a shake. Cyrus ignored the handshake and laughed. "I'm not going anywhere, Officer Winesfeld. I have a party to plan for." "Sir, it's Chief Winesfeld, and that's an order, not a suggestion. It's coming from the governor." "It could come from the President of the United States, and I ain't going anywhere." Vanslow crossed his arms in defiance and huffed. He then shoved his arms, wrists up at Casey. "Are you going to arrest me?" Casey studied the marks on the gypsy's arms. At first, he thought maybe the gypsy might have tried to take his life at one point, but then realized he was a cutter. The scars ran up the insides of his arm all the way to his wife-beater undershirt he wore. "No, sir, you're on your own, though. If the fire does come to Sandcastle with the winds that are supposed to happen, we cannot be responsible for you or any of your belongings. I'm to report to the National Guard of how many people that refuse to go, and you'll be one of them. At that point, it is up to them what they want to do with you." "Such fascists we have here in California." "Ha!" Vanzo laughed, then stuffed his hands into his pockets. "I'm not going anywhere, sir. Report me how you must. I do hope it is over with before Halloween. I don't want to miss that party." "Business going okay for you?" Casey asked, curious about how the man would stay in business. "Oh, yes, all costumes have been ordered already. And that is one reason why I can't leave. The special orders aren't ready yet. It takes a day for each, at least, and I have 3 more to finish. I do hope they're here for the fitting, as they've paid so much money for these beauties." "Very well." Casey stepped away from the door and put on his cowboy hat. "If you see any fire or need any assistance evacuating, do call." He then paused for a moment, noticing the big freezer behind Vanslow. "Good day." Vanslow let out a big sigh as he watched the police chief leave in his black patrol jeep. He laughed at the big freezer, just large enough to hold his prey. "Just a few more days, and she will be perfect for display, just like those in the freezer stacked behind her." He looked at the glass cases standing upright behind him. It was going to be difficult to move this frozen woman to the case, but he had help by a few gypsy friends. Blackmail was a great thing, and it worked wonders on employees who needed money and couldn't work in the real world. Most of his workers were criminals with records. He paid them handsomely and threatened them with jail time if they were ever caught. Some of those states they helped him in had the death penalty, and they knew it. another point of security for Vanslow. He sat down at the sewing table and pulled out a long piece of silk and another of light leather, then aligned the edges and folded a crease. With the piece of cotton positioned between them, the tailor began to sew together his first creation. He wasn't too concerned about the blemishes in the leather, for they added to the collection. His costumes weren't cheap. This one in particular ran $35,000, mostly for his time and effort, plus a potentially hazardous way he collected his leather, and that it was a special order. This unique piece included a tattoo and a beautiful blue butterfly that would grace the picture frame of the person who hung it. The day he found the donor of this piece was incredibly lucky. Not many beautiful women found his colorful flair attractive. Usually he had to capture his prey and brutally take their skin. But that night her beauty captivated his heart. He lured the woman to his trailer with the promise of money, something easily done when preying on women who sold their bodies for pleasure. She was different than the others, though. Vicky was gullible and knew at this. Her craving for drugs was obvious, and just a mere mention of the candy in his pocket. Then she was in the palm of his hands. As she stared at him with watery eyes, he slowly began to slice into her side, under her armpit. Doing this to a live capture made the skin easier to work with. He began his conquest for the week right when he arrived, knowing that he didn't have much time for the skin to be tanned and treated. It amazed him that people would actually pay for his creations without even seeing the final products first. But they did, and he had to make sure they looked amazing. Of course, these customers knew exactly what they were getting. Most of the time it was a random hit with specific instructions as to skin color, blemishes, hair color, and other attributes. But this one was special and was a bit more pricey. His customer could handle it, though. He thought about the conversation as he continued to slice down the side of her leg and around the ankle. "Yes, her name is Vicky. She's an addict and a hooker. You'll find her down on Polk in San Francisco. That's where she makes most of her money these days. I don't want her abducted in Sandcastle. I want her to just disappear. Got it? I'll give you $10,000 now, and $35,000 when the job is finished." Pete Downs blabbered into the phone. Vanslow didn't think Pete sounded all that educated, like most of his customers, but he had proof of the thrift store's owner's income, and it was probably more than most of his Ivy League corporate customers made in a year. A little shocked, he accepted the funds and the order. As he lifted her skin from her body, Vicky's heart raced when she went into cardiac arrest. The state of shock she was already in made it easier for the blood flow to her veins as he cut, which also made it easier to remove it from the body. She shook and convulsed as he pulled, and then she was gone. He was careful not to tear into the butterfly, for that was the most important piece to his customer. Her perfect skin would make the most beautiful wall piece for the picture he wanted to hang. Her face would make a lovely mask, and hands for elegant gloves for others to buy. Vanslow laughed a little as he stitched in the backing for the picture, then mounted the skin in a picture frame. That is all the customer cared about. The rest would make nice party decorations or pieces for next year's costumes. It was around 9 p.m. when Vanslow finished his creation and left for Peter's old run-down thrift store. How this man was one of the richest men living in Northern California baffled the old gypsy. He might not be rich, and he might be an old gypsy, but he had class, and this old fool with his lazy eye, pungent breath, and tasteless style of odd corduroy pants and T-shirts just didn't reek of money at all. The guy didn't even have teeth. He reminded him of some old broke programmer from the 90s after the dot-coms crashed, and the old programmers who ran out of money while the new breed of geeks stepped in. He drove around the vacant area in the dark. The electricity had been cut by the power company for days, and most people were running off generators or solar. Having the streetlights out added to the blackness of the already dark town. Just ahead of him, he noticed a man walking slowly in the street. At least, he thought it was a man. As he drove closer, he realized the person was wearing a torn-up police uniform. His skin was deathly gray and shadowed. There was a blood stain around his mouth and chin, then down the front of his uniform. "Damn, these people really get into Halloween here," Vanslo laughed and then continued to drive the framed butterfly picture to his first customer of the week. This is Spooky Boo. If you enjoyed this story, head on over to my website at www.scarystorytime.com and leave a comment. The next story is a continuation of this one. Enjoy it, and happy Halloween.